Hello, my name is Tarek Finn, and this is the TrendMovements.com podcast, recording from Taipei City. I find myself by a body of running water again. I went to one location earlier, but I was battling with mosquitoes, so I decided to come to this area that I come to sit at every once in a while. I realized that the river over here is kind of loud, but hopefully it's not too distracting. The way this part of the city is, I'm at the base of a mountain, and just about everywhere you've got running water. There's actually quite a few rivers running through the city, so it's pretty. Once you get to a wooded area, a somewhat wooded area, or just an area away from the roads, you're often finding yourself close to water. What am I doing here? So today, I'm going to talk to you about Ponzi schemes. Ponzi schemes were made famous, at least in recent history, by Bernie Madoff. I think this article was put up on the site maybe 2 years ago. I can't remember. But I learned about Ponzi schemes from the whole Bernie Madoff thing. I also listened to an episode of the podcast called Stuff You Should Know. Or is it How Stuff Works? It's called Stuff You Should Know. And they had an explanation of Ponzi schemes. And I also did a little bit of research on my own. So, like I said, years back, Bernie Madoff made the Ponzi scheme big in the news by pulling off what was a giant Ponzi scheme. Now, the name Ponzi comes from an actual person. Where's his name? It was an Italian guy, Charles Ponzi. So Charles Ponzi, he was in the news in the 1920s in the U.S. Oh, wait. I start off the article with some attempts at humor. I say, what is a Ponzi scheme? Well, if I were to guess, based on the word Ponzi, I'd say that it sounds like a delicious Italian dish. Folks, is that funny? Sounds like a flaky dessert, pasta, cheese. And then I end the paragraph by saying Ponzi schemes unfortunately aren't delicious at all. That's my moment of impact. So Ponzi schemes come from or the name comes from Charles Ponzi. So in the 1920s, Ponzi, he brought investors with a plan that obviously wouldn't work now. So his plan was called postage stamp arbitrage. And what he was doing was selling a coupon, or a what you call a reply coupon. A reply coupon can be exchanged for a postage stamp. So I guess that's kind of a token of the stamp. And you can trade the actual papers instead of the stamps, or you could redeem those papers for stamps. So let's say I have this paper that says I can get a 20-cent stamp. I bring it to the post office. They give me a 20-cent stamp. There are ways of, by buying these postage stamps for different countries, in different countries, like maybe if I wanted to buy American stamps and I was buying them from Canada, there might be some days where the price of buying the coupon in Canada would be cheaper than the actual value for the stamp in the U.S. So I could exchange the coupons for the stamps, I guess then selling the stamps and making money off of that. Obviously, you'd have to deal with large amounts. And obviously, that wouldn't work now because I can't tell you the last time I bought a stamp. And everything is done by email now, so, or it would be much harder to do now. So he promised his clients from this scheme that he was doing that if they put up money, he would be able to do all the trading and he would be able to return 50% profit in 90 days. Some of the sources I saw said 50% profit in 45 days, which is obviously amazing. So there was a huge demand for his services. Thousands of people signed up, and by the end, he had taken millions of dollars from his investors. So what makes a Ponzi scheme is he would take money from new investors. So John and Bob, they're interested. So he takes money from John and Bob, and he uses that money partly to keep and then partly to pay out some of the earlier investors that want to get out. So let's say Bill is ready to get out. He wants back his $1,000. Bill gets back his $1,000, which is an actual 50% profit. Because Bill got that profit, it's advertising for everybody else that the plan actually works. So it attracts more investors to put their money in because you have proof that somebody has come out on top. So you take money from investors, use it to pay off his old investors, attract new clients, and eventually Ponzi was charged with mail fraud. I didn't find out exactly how he was caught or what was the straw that basically broke the camel's back or what caused the scheme to fall apart. But he was charged in 1920, and assuming he did some jail time, and then he was deported back to Italy in 1934. So this wasn't the first time that somebody had run this scam, but he was the most famous. So this is something that people have thought of before. So the scale that he brought it to is why it actually bears his name, because he was the biggest guy to do it up until this point. Right now, the biggest guy we know to run this is Bernie Madoff. So Bernie Madoff, very famous story. He was in the news several years ago for basically his Ponzi scam crashing. Now, Bernie Madoff started his Ponzi scheme in the 1970s, and it ran all the way until 2008, which, wow, all the way from 1970 until 2008. So he was able to keep people's confidence and keep people putting money and basically saving and parking their money with him for all those years. All those years. So in 2008, though, when the financial markets started to waver or crash, some people wanted to pull their money out. Even though Madoff was supposedly showing returns of 4.5% through October 2008. So he was still reporting profits, but because his clients either thought it was strange that he could report profits when nobody else was, or they wanted back some of their money to pay off some other debts that they accumulated in other investments in other more legitimate places. When people started asking for their money back, obviously there had to be a problem. Let's see, where was I here? So what makes something a Ponzi scheme is the money is taken for the purpose of trading, or like with Ponzi himself, was the postage stamp arbitrage. The scheme or the scam is from the fact that no trading or nothing is actually bought or sold. The money is just kept, and the money is put into a pool where the scam artist keeps it and then spits a little bit back out to the few that are pulling out to keep the whole thing going. Man, I can't imagine. From all the way from 1970s to 2008, I don't know how he would sleep. I should have put this in the article, but I did read something at one point that the idea Madoff didn't initially have the idea of scamming people, but eventually this is what happened. So I've heard some sources say that what happened was with taking the money in, trades were supposed to be made, but because he there was some delegation that was being passed off, or basically a lack of responsibility, some of these things that were supposed to be done with the money were not being done, which snowballed. More money came in, and continually nothing was being done. Although, I do find that a little bit hard to believe. I find it a little bit hard to believe that, you know, you have somebody working for you that they didn't manage to put the $2 million into the proper account, and there was oversight to that. Like, oh, man, John, you didn't get it done, but get it done tomorrow. And there was no checking up on that. So I have a hard time believing that. And since the scam was going from the 1970s to 2008, there would have been a lot of time to correct or pull out of what was happening. But I guess once you're into something this deep with millions of dollars fraudulently coming in and out of your door, I don't know. Maybe it's hard to stop. I wouldn't know. Let's see. So investors who exited earlier, they were getting money from the scam, which is why Madoff was able to attract a lot of big-time investors. So he was able to attract celebrities and banks, very legitimate investment firms, because of his reputation. So he had a pretty good reputation going for him. Very good, actually, because there was he had over $7 billion, supposedly, in assets. So he had a lot of money that he ended up owing to investors, which he couldn't produce because I'm guessing it was already spent on his lifestyle, spent on the offices, spent on keeping the scam or the lie going. Where was this? So Madoff, they say, had $50 billion riding on the fund. And showing returns of 4.5% in October 2008, but the markets were hurting, so some investors wanted to pull out. In a short time, he owed $7 billion to investors, and he couldn't actually return it because he didn't have it at the time. And that led to his eventual confession and imprisonment, because he was asked and he was under contract to give some people their money back. He couldn't do it, and he admitted that it wasn't there. So I don't know. Maybe that was a relief for him. I'm guessing that he must have known that this day was coming. Like, he must have known for years and years and years that this day was coming, and that was his cause of not sleeping at night. Or maybe he slept fine, but if he wasn't insane, I'm sure he had this thought running through his head quite a bit. So it was a long, long ordeal, all the way from the 70s to 2008, and it ended abruptly in 2008. It was big news. Everyone was surprised by it. A lot of people were surprised by it. And I think his case has led to a lot of financial controls being put up by the government. Some just, some kind of knee-jerk reactions, which make things difficult for business people. But it's just precautionary to try to prevent something like this from happening. Although you can't really completely prevent this from happening. If somebody wants to scam people and they're charming enough, then it's possible that it can be done. So many sophisticated investors, I say sophisticated investors in quotations, were taken for a ride. And let's see, I have a list of some people that invested. So this is on Wikipedia. So Madoff, his own firm, put $7.5 billion, which he would have received from the people he was taking. The Spanish bank, $3.5 billion. Rye Investment Management, $3.1 billion. Kinggate Management, $4.5 billion. Some of these sources are Bloomberg, Wall Street Journal. Different sources are saying which banks or which people were involved and how much they're involved for. Fortis Bank, a Dutch bank, $1.35 billion. The Thema Fund, which is an Irish fund, which is another Madoff feeder fund, $1.1 billion. HSBC, $1 billion. Union Bancaire Privée, a Swiss bank, $700 million. Natixis, a French bank, $600 million. I've heard that name before. Royal Bank of Scotland, $600 million. Sterling Equities, $500 million. BBVA, a Spanish bank, $4 million. What does that say? $404 million, sorry. Fixed Asset Management, $400 million. RMF, which is a Man Group, which is a hedge fund. It's a pretty big hedge fund. They had $630 million in there. Normal Holdings, $302 million. Pioneer Investments, an Irish firm, $280 million. EIM Group, a European bank, $230 million. And I'm actually skipping quite a few banks. Where else? What else do we have? Yeshiva University, a Jewish university endowment, $140 million. Dexia, Franco-Belgian bank, $106.9 million. Hadash, a Jewish charity, $90 million. So these are like legit financial firms that we're putting money in. Royal Bank of Canada, $40.4 million. Wallasoff Foundation, they're a charity, $38 million. Let's see, where else? Madoff Family Foundation. Wow, Madoff was pretty invested in his own stuff. Phoenix Holdings, an Israeli services company, $15 million. Let's see. We also have, if you're into celebrities, let's talk about names. So, famous people. Kevin Bacon was involved. Uma Thurman. Steven Spielberg, the director, he had some money in there. Larry King, from Larry King Live, he had some money in there. John Malkovich, from one of my favorite movies, Being John Malkovich, he had some in there. Elliot Spitzer had some money in there. Sandy Koufax, Mets legend, he had some money in there. Zsa Zsa Gabor, I haven't heard that name in a long time. She had some money in there. A rumored $10 million. This website, wonderwall.msn.com. I'm not sure how legit it is. There's a lot of pink along the top. Jeffrey Katzberg, DreamWorks CEO, had some money in there. John Denver, the man that sang Country Roads, that song, he had some money in there. So, yeah, Madoff got quite a few people. He got quite a few banks. He got quite a few charities. I'm getting mosquito bites. I thought I avoided the mosquito bites. So, let's see, where was I in the article? So, like I said, he got some quote-unquote sophisticated investors, and they were taken along for the ride as well. And that shows that it's important to do your homework when investing into a fund or any kind of investment vehicle. Obviously, there has to be trust regardless. Trust is very important. So his story has gotten the industry to tighten up rules, some justly, some unjustly. The idea that big is better is not necessarily true, because Madoff was super big guy. And as much as we all hate to do homework, it is important to check things out. Or, I mean, at the very least, you gotta have somebody that you can go to for advice. You could go to it for advice on your financial matters when it comes to going to another party. But at the end, the onus is on you. You're responsible for any decisions that you make. Talk to anybody that's in tax court for mistakes that their accountant have made. Accountants make, if your accountant makes a mistake, you're still responsible for it. So if your advisor makes a mistake, unfortunately, you're responsible for it. You've got to just make sure you do your research when you're looking into things like investment. So as an investor, if you're looking at a fund or something to go into, you should be able to find a degree of transparency, which means that the company should basically have open books, as any company should. And you should have some idea of the strategy that they're doing. And it shouldn't seem like just some kind of magic box. You should have an idea of what their strategy is and what it is that they're kind of doing. There's not all funds are going to give you complete transparency as far as what trades they're in at the moment, but some actually will. Some will tell you what we're in now. Like, we're in this ticker, and they'll give you a list of tickers that they've traded over the month. So a degree of transparency helps. You should understand exactly what kind of system the fund is trading, or that your guy is trading. And it should be simple enough that you can explain it to others. You don't want to, if you're involved in something where you are drawing a diagram for your friends, like, so what I do here is I put my $1,000 in here, and out this end comes profit, and you get a lot of questions, and you can't answer those questions, then maybe there's a problem. Maybe it's you that doesn't understand it well enough. If you don't understand well enough, you should be able to call your advisor and find out exactly what's being done, how these trades are being made, how the money is being made or lost. If they can't do that, if they can't explain it to you, or if it's too secretive, then I would picture that. I would say that is some kind of a red flag. You also want to avoid managers who have faced fraud charges in the past. Even the best funds have periods where the fund is in the red. So if a fund that you're looking at is always winning, that's kind of another red flag. There are some, I have heard of funds that have been always up each month, but they're very rare. They're very rare, and usually what you expect to see is you expect to see some months in the red, some months in the black. And there should be some reflection of what's going on in the actual markets in the fund. So when a fund gets revealed as a Ponzi scheme, many victims say they saw some signs and ignored them or ignored their gut feelings. So that's what you don't want to do. You don't want to ignore gut feelings. Anyways, that's it for today. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at info@trendmovements.com. You're listening to me on trendmovements.com. Once again, my name is Tariq Finn. Thank you for listening. I didn't even record.